Hello and welcome to season 2, episode 13, lucky number 13 of the D Hoop University podcast. This is your host, Daryl Harris, also known as D Hoopster. And for today, it was a special day. Your boy's day of birth, another year older, wiser, happy for that. So I had to tap in with my Cancerian brother, Kendall. Fraternity brother, brother in arms, whatever you want to call him, man. One of my dogs for real down in the A. And although he is from down south, he is a proud member of Laker Nation. You would see that by the 2-4 jersey he has on while we're rocking today. We're on the heels of the NBA draft. The Lakers have loaded up. Plans are in motion. One update as of this recording is that D'Angelo Russell has opted in to his $18 or $19 million player option for the season. However, the Lakers are looking to trade him, is what the reports are this morning, Saturday, June 29th. LeBron James has also opted out of his clause in order to restructure his contract. What you will hear very soon on here is that I said, Bron, you got to help us out financially. You got to take a pay cut. So moves are being made as we speak. The offseason is so lit in the NBA. And we got to feed the home team right now. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're going to do. Shout outs to family. Shout outs to loved ones, homies, everybody who hit me up on my birthday, made me feel special, especially a certain someone. Shout goes out to all of you. And know that it is appreciated. Know that we are here to keep rocking. We want you all to be engaged. Like, follow, and subscribe. Join the conversation. With that being said, without further ado, let's talk some hoops. All right, now, for this is the day that the Lord made your boy. What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in. I am here with a good brother of mine, Cancerian brother of mine. This is the birthday pod. This is the birthday pod, you know.
Not for real.
I even, you know, deep tease, but birthday twin, my boy Quest, we might get some wrestling on this same episode as well. So that's the energy we're coming with, man. A lot of thankfulness, a lot of optimism, a lot of focus, all of that jazz, man. Another year older, another year wiser, another year to continue the journey, man. How you feeling, Kendall? What's good, bro?
Man, I'm good, bro. I can't complain. Like you said, man, birthday was a couple of days ago, man. Now it's y'all turn, cancer game. You know what I'm saying? Gemini's go over there. Leo's go over there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
chill. Birthday is good, man. I can't complain, man. I'm grateful to be above ground. I just came back from a little vacation. About to start a new job on the 16th. Get to this chicken bag. Man, I can't complain, bro. Everything is everything.
You hanging up the mechanic scrubs?
Man, hey, listen, bro. One thing I can tell you, bro, about working with cars, man, it's not necessarily the selling the car parts and all of that stuff that's the hard part, but or the annoying part, but it's dealing with people, man. Because people just, they don't possess as much intelligence as you might like. And you know they say common sense ain't common. And so that's just kind of what it be, man. You know, I think, you know, you always got to do as much as you can and help yourself as much as possible. And then when you need to go to the experts, then you go to the experts, or, you know, you ask for help when you need it. But man, it's like holding hands, man. It's like holding hands. So yeah, I'm happy to be moving on. I got another opportunity that's going to be paying me way more money. So
yeah,
that's always a plus, you know what I'm saying? Cause money is a tool, and I'm going to be able to use that tool to build bigger and better things and keep on leveling up and moving up the ladder. So yeah, man, I'm excited for sure.
Yep, these are resources, not the source, but resources to allow us to walk in our purpose, man. Live happily. Mm-hmm. I got some exciting news to be shared and endeavors that will begin very shortly as well. So just know that you will be aware very soon about all of that jazz. But man, it's a lot going on right now, man. It's summertime. It's 100 and something everywhere. You know, black people, we get our power from the sun. So we charged up right now. Mm-hmm. And we can sort of go wherever you want, bro.
rocking the Lakers jersey. Best believe.
Yeah, I had to. You know what I'm saying? Hey, this always.
I got the brim right here, man. Stop.
Had to put on the goat. R.I.P. to the king, man. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, man. R.I.P. to Beam, man. We was gonna talk a little Lakers today, so I was like, you know what, man? May as well go ahead and, you know what I'm saying, rep the set, put on. I mean, you know,
we're gonna have to kick it with that first then too, bro, because I honestly haven't spent much time talking about the Lake Show. Last time on the pod, we really got into it was after they got bounced with Kevin on here on the Like That pod. That was a real good combo we had, though. They just got bounced. They just fired Darvin Ham. I was like, you know, man, they kind of scapegoated my boy, but I'm not going to act like he was Phil Jackson either. You know
right.
what I'm
saying? Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Somebody else out there that will bring different qualities to the job and take us elsewhere that he necessarily didn't specialize in.
For sure.
I said that JJ Redick was appearing like the man for the job. That is now signed, sealed, delivered. We also are on the heels of the draft. And the boys, they struck gold in the draft, man.
Yeah, they did great. I think that first pick in the first round was a good pick. I pretty much knew that they weren't going to pick Bronny with the first pick because obviously the most talent is available or the best talent is available in the first round. And then the second round of the draft, the second round of 30 picks is normally not necessarily worst picks, but just not as highly coveted as the first round picks. So I already knew with the first pick that we had, I think it was the 17th pick, that we weren't going to take Bronny at that pick. But I definitely knew, especially after the contract came out with Bron, that they were going to give him what he would like. And I was drafting Bronny James. I personally, I'm not mad at it. I mean, I was doing a little bit of research before we got on, looking at different opinions and, you know, searching the web and seeing what people's vibrations are, how they feel about it. And I mean, a lot of people are upset. I mean, me as a Laker fan, I mean, you got to look at it this way. By the time we got to that second pick, who else was really available for us to take that would have been a better pick over Bronny as far as the team's long-term success and also making Bron happy? Because I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, they're not trying to win and all that type of stuff, but LeBron James is still in the NBA. LeBron James is still probably the face of the league. LeBron James is still, internationally speaking, probably the most notable name. And so you have to give a guy like LeBron James, who's the all-time leading scorer. He led your team to a championship a couple of years ago. Like, he's still LeBron James. So, I mean, this whole surprise that, you know, he kind of got his way with the contract, with the coach, and as well as getting his son drafted. I mean, I don't know what people really expected. But you're going to not give LeBron what he wants and then risking him going to the New York Knicks or to the Warriors or leaving the team at all, and then you're definitely going to be in a worse spot without him. So I'm not mad at the pick. I mean, people are claiming nepotism, right? Saying, oh, LeBron James is nepotism. But I mean, with this very same franchise with the Lakers, we had Luke Walton as a coach a few years ago, when he was also a former player on the team. And I think me and you could have did a better coaching job than Luke Walton did a few years back. And I think it's safe to say the only reason why he really got that job was not based on his resume or his acumen as a player, assistant coach, a personnel developer, or anything like that, but simply because Bill Walton was his dad. And, you know, Bill Walton won that championship with the Trailblazers, I think 77. After, you know, a few years of injury
shout out to Bill Walton.
Yeah, RIP to Bill Walton, man. Not knocking him as an individual. I think he was actually a pretty good player, you know, which is why we have been talking about him.
Incredible.
Yeah, all that time. But like I said, Luke Walton wasn't, at the time in which we were considering Luke Walton for the job, he wasn't, you know, a notable candidate. And so with the recent Lakers moves, I mean, JJ Redick, we signed him, I think, a 4-year deal at about $8 million per year. I think that's going to be beneficial to the Lakers going forward because we'll have a little bit more wiggle room as far as cap space to make some other player moves and maybe personnel moves moving forward. I was mixed at first. I'm not going to lie. At first, I was like, dang, Sam Cassell is out there. Mark Jackson is a quality candidate still, even though he hasn't coached since the Warriors. I think 2015 or 2014 it was, yep, he had gotten fired. But, you know, there were definitely some other candidates that were available, and I think the Lakers probably honestly did consider them. However, I think that J.J. Redick is a good hire in this way. J.J. Redick is not too far removed from the game. I think him having the podcast with LeBron James, understanding how your star player sees the game. And honestly, I was impressed. And it seems like J.J. Redick's basketball IQ is higher than probably most people thought. And you can see that clearly based on his conversations with LeBron James. And so hiring him without any experience when there was other quality candidates on the table, I think it's necessary and reasonable that he gets a little pushback. Because some people may feel as though he skipped some levels, so to speak. He put in the cheat code and didn't kind of go through the normal ringer as far as maybe being a personnel developer or assistant coach and then working his way up a staff and then eventually getting his head coach position like it normally goes. But I mean, as far as his basketball acumen and understanding the game, I think that it's going to be beneficial for not only LeBron James to have a head coach who's on the same page as him, but also for the rest of the team, because J.J. Redick is a younger guy. He's not, like I said, he's not too far removed from the game. And honestly, his takes on ESPN, I personally feel, were always on point. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, he'll have a few years to kind of figure it out. I do believe Darvin Ham was scapegoated, but we know how it is when it comes to the Lake Show, man. The Lake Show is a different market. It's like a Boston. It's like a New York. It's like a Golden State Warriors team. Yeah, where the expectation is not first round, second round, or even, you know, conference finals. We want to compete for championships. And so especially when you look at the roster construction, Darvin Ham, unfortunately, I do believe also, like you said earlier, he was scapegoated. And, you know, they won the championship with Frank Vogel in 2020, right? But Frank Vogel didn't have much to do with that championship as much as it had to do with the actual construction of that roster. You know, having Dwight Howard.
No slouch. He knew how to utilize it, put rotations out there that were going to be successful against certain matchups.
Absolutely. And we saw that most notably, I would say, in Denver Nuggets and Lakers series. Even before that year, before the COVID year, you know, Dwight Howard in those particular lineups kind of had Jokic's number. I actually am upset that we got rid of Howard because we went the conference finals against the Nuggets again. And I still believe if we had Dwight Howard, that would have went a little bit different because Dwight Howard had Jokic's number.
And Dwight will let us know, bro. He'll let us know that he out there, that he could have been there for what's the Isaiah Thomas clip? For some reason, I was qualified to make the team, yet I didn't make the team.
Right. Because, I mean, as we know, basketball is a mental game. And so being able to keep somebody off kilter and just make them a little bit uncomfortable is sometimes all you need to get the edge. Like I said, it wasn't like
Dwight Howard
was. Right, exactly. It wasn't like Dwight was a scoring threat he once was in Orlando or early in his career. But his defensive capabilities, while they took a slight step down due to his surgeries and his injuries, he still was great defensively. And we saw that a couple years ago, like said, you know, when he was a part of that Lakers squad. He kind of took Jokic and he didn't totally ice him, but like said, he threw him off kilter. He jacked up his rhythm. And then you saw what happened.
JaVale.
Right.
And so we'll see, AD. No, yeah. I'm excited, man. I was 4 weeks ago, even we could just say, I was definitely trepidatious about the upcoming season. Just knowing that the Western Conference is a dog, there's teams like, you know, Minnesota, there's Denver, there's Dallas, there's Phoenix and Golden States, you know, looming. There's teams like Memphis that are going to be back next year. There's Houston that's just loaded with talent. So I kind of saw all of that and it was just like, we wasted a healthy season at LeBron and AD ultimately this year. Mm-hmm. And we now have to re-up again and do it the right way, which we still are going to need breaks to get it done in the long run. And honestly, man, a lot of that worry is pushed away now, bro. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling really good. So for one, JJ, he's not Darvin Ham. He's not going to have his hands in the pockets. He might draw a play up out of a timeout every now and again. That's an understatement. J.J. Redick is definitely going to implement some schemes. He definitely has a sharp basketball mind. Coach K went to bat for him. And there's a stories about how Kobe didn't like him.
And honestly, that is a sign of respect from Kobe.
It is.
If Kobe definitely disregarded you, if he didn't care about you, if he didn't want to pick you up, that's because he's like, you're not worth my time.
Right.
I'll let Sasha Vujacic worry about you.
Right.
You go deal with Jordan Farmar. Like, I don't need to be concerned with you.
Shout out to Jordan Farmar, man.
Nah, I'll let Meta give you problems in the fourth quarter. You're not my concern. For him to do that is the same way he ran through Powell in the Olympics. It's because it's like, no, I'm sending a message to a competitor that I'm not taking lightly.
Right.
And JJ, that we one thing we've learned from him as well on TV, some of his podcast experience as well, is that he's got a fire to him. He would sit there from Stephen A, look Stephen A dead in the face and say, dog, what are you saying?
Yeah.
Let me tell you why I'm saying, what are you saying? You sound nuts, my brother. Like, he would sit across from Stephen A and be like, I'm not letting you fly with you know, just saying anything.
Yeah.
Which, that's not your show. That's Stephen A's show. You know, he tries to kind of hold his own and hold his ground on that. On his finals commentary and his commentary in general throughout the postseason, you know, it showed where his mind is at end game. Very quick and cerebral with, hold on. They just did this because, you know, he's analytical in that sense and is able to sort of dissect the game. Darvin Ham was a former player. He understood how to cater to players and be like, look, I'm not going, y'all are great. I'm going to sort of let y'all be great. I'm here for y'all. But at the same time, coach, we need you to get a technical every now and then. We need you to bark at a ref. We need you to have that. We need you to be the biggest advocate for the team.
Right.
And then, of course, put the lineups out there that are going to make sense. And he tried. Ultimately, the roster just didn't have enough firepower this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think it's going to be different. And for better or worse, man, there's some stories out there about what JJ said to the girl at Duke. You know what, man? I'm not going to rush to say – I'm not going to call that girl a liar, but I'm going to say that however that reflects on JJ, it further speaks to the fire. I don't – because there's no way to sort of positively spin that. And that's, that's not what I'm trying to do.
Right, yeah.
JJ will drop a MF-er, you know what I'm saying,
in the
huddle.
I mean, even in the press conference, he said like
literally,
I don't give
literally.
He said it. I don't give a F about, you know.
So it's like, hey, look, he not some certain tie, just wipe off, you know, Joe Schmo. Nah, JJ's got, he wants the respect. He kind of, and he doesn't, and he, literally, like you said, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He is coming in here to maximize the talent and ceiling of what they are going to compile with this team. And I'm excited for that, man. I think that Dalton Connect at 17 was probably a home run, man. We had the same pick as last season. And I said this on the pod too. I don't hate Hood Schifino. I hope he comes along in year two. We're going to see him in summer league probably again in a couple weeks. But we took him at the same pick last year and got nada. We got nada from my boy.
Yeah.
That's just the fact of the matter.
Yeah, his production
for the entirety of the season.
Yeah,
we didn't get some spot minutes during an injury. We didn't get 6 minutes here. We didn't get a glimpse here and there. We got pretty much nada. And what I was saying that coming into this draft is that we can't let that happen. And knowing how they're going to be in the cap, it was really more important that they found a player to just at least get you 20, 25 minutes with that pick so you can be paying him on a rookie scale versus, now let's trade this pick. Let's go star chasing, and then let's sign folks for the minimum, because that's not what gets it done right now. You need roster continuity. You need guys. You need bodies. You need depth. And last season we missed on a Jaime Jaquez. We went right after him. We missed on Brandon Pajimski, who was the pick after that, and Cam Whitmore was the pick 20. We after seven. That was 18, 19, 20.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys that all looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. Jaquez was first team all rookie. Pajimski was second team. And Cam Whitmore was a top five projected pick. I tweeted real time, Rob, go get Cam. We got blessed with a top five name, and we didn't do it. Anywho, this year, sort of similar scenario. I don't think Kinect was projected top five anywhere, but he was SEC Player of the Year, one of the best seasons in Tennessee basketball history. And this guy's a journeyman, man. He's got heart. He's got grit. He made it from JUCO to the collegiate level to the D1 level. Mm-hmm. And made a statement in 1 year. That's somebody that isn't content with, you know what I'm saying? Let's just see how it goes. But no, that's a baller. That's a hooper right there.
And to go from the junior level to get back to D1 and then go into the league, you know, that's a totally different ball game when we're talking basketball than football. You know, JUCO in football is a route to the NFL. There's plenty of players who, for whether it's grades, whether it's, you know,
and the way, the way depth charts work, you need, you know, like multiple bodies at every position. You can say, Coach, put me wherever you want me to put. I'll play however you want me to play. There's 55 spots versus 15.
Right. Like Cam Newton, for example, from some people may not know, before Cam Newton was at Auburn.
Blinn, shout out to Blinn.
Yeah, Blinn College. I mean, he was a part of a stacked, and I mean absolutely stacked, Florida team.
I would say, Blinn went with the Florida, then with Auburn.
Right. And so it's like, you know, he goes from junior college, shines, able to go to a D1 program and then go to another one to kind of have his own say. And then he ends up going to the national championship after being a part of and getting some of that experience. You know, so that's a pipeline in football. But basketball, you know, if you're playing at the JUCO level, normally it's an indication of something else. And it's and most JUCO players in basketball, let's just be honest, they normally don't make it to the league. So I agree with your point, man. Him being able to work through that, find his way back at a D1 level. And tennis, you know, that's a pretty good program. You know, it's not, you know, a Duke or North
Carolina. Oh, no, man. They've been exceptional over in recent years.
Yeah, they've always had some pretty good players. Now,
they pumped out pros. Grant Williams, Admiral Sheffield had a good season there.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of their point guard last season. His name escaped my mind, but he was on the cusp of the league right now. But, no, they've been playing great. The SEC as a whole, as a basketball conference, is not the SEC from 10 years ago.
Absolutely not. I mean, one of the greatest players in the league right now, a guy who I think is going to take a huge step forward next season, and Anthony Edwards. I mean, he came out of my home state. He came out of Georgia, and he's without a doubt probably the best prospect that Georgia has ever had as far as going to the league. So
and played in the COVID season.
Absolutely.
College ball. So it was like they didn't even really know what to expect, and they still knocked it out of the park and got it right with the first pick.
Absolutely. And then, you know, another notable draftee from Georgia's is KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's an NBA champion and has been phenomenal on every team. He's played his role extremely well on every team he's been on. And that's when he was playing with us on the Lakers, when he was playing with the Nuggets. And, you know, he's a great shooter, three and D type of guy.
Knows his role.
Yeah, knows his role. So, like I said, you know, Kentucky, Georgia, Tennessee, you know, the SEC definitely, while it's traditionally known for football, definitely has a large amount of basketball prospects, like you said, and ain't the same ACC from 10 years ago. One thing I'm looking forward to seeing this year, though, or this summer, I should say, and something that I think is going to be important for both of our draft picks, both for Bronny and our first round pick, is that they're really going to have to get to work quickly, you know, because part of the expectation, like I said, with the new coach and with these two draft picks, it's like I said, they're going to be expected to produce. We don't need you to drop 25 and 5 right away, but we need you to have a productive season. We need you to come in immediately and help this team. One element that I think is really going to help the Lakers is LeBron playing with his son. I do believe we're going to see a different version of LeBron this year. I can say that I've seen kind of the frustration in LeBron in his body language.
That brother's gonna have a battery in his back, dog.
Man,
that's the same man as for one, man. We gotta spend some time on it. And you got to it earlier a little bit. And it's like what's crazy is I don't even think it's this whole we gotta worry. This is LeBron made the pick and Le GM, all of this and that. Y'all go shut up. Shut up. All right. First of all, Bronny's the highest McDonald's All-American. Coming out of high school, no slouch in terms of skipping steps and blah, blah, blah. He didn't have, and I love LaMelo. I'm with the LaMelo defender. He didn't have the LaMelo ball treatment in high school of, let's cater to you and let's – that's not – Bronny wasn't handheld at any point.
And he wasn't chucking up 30, 40 shots a game like LaMelo was or like a, even a Austin Rivers, you know. Dude, he wasn't chucking up 30, 40 shots a game.
I've been consistent on this pod for over a year now. I think the first conversation was with Chuck in May of 2023 about Bronny, and I've held true from day one. I love some of this guy's characteristics, man. For one, he's a fellow gamer. I'm a big video gamer myself as well. And when you do that, you just have a sort of realistic perception of the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you understand how pieces work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, not an unrealistic, like, he is a competitive gamer. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't play, I'm going to go score 100 with Kobe. Mm-hmm. It's like, nah, I'm going to run this screen. I'm going to look for the opposite man. I'm playing on the hardest difficulty. Like, I'm challenging myself.
And you also got that 2K angle. You got that 2K camera so you can really see spacing and.
Nah, yeah, for real.
All of that.
Uh-huh. And then, so on top of that, he's played an unselfish floor general sort of role all through high school. Once he got to college, he joined a loaded backcourt. And we already know about the health history, the health scare that he had coming into the season.
Like, he literally almost died.
real life stuff right there.
And, like, he literally almost died.
And this is the analogy I made on the previous podcast. I put it at the very end of the pod, so I'm going to say it again because some folks might have not heard it. But imagine LeBron James Jr. His name was anything else and that he played in the Turkish, Serbian, French, Australian, A, B league, whatever we want to say. Mm-hmm. And he entered the draft as a 19-year-old who only put up 5 or 6 points on these teams. But scouts were looking at their film, looking at his film and said, you know what? He's not 6'6 like some of these guys to where the length, we're so enticed by length and size and versatility and all this and that. However, hell of an athlete. We're not disputing that. Hell of an athlete. Gets up for 6'1. Looks more like an Eric Bledsoe 6'1 than a Jeff Teague. You know what I mean?
That's a great comparison. That's a great comparison.
Mm-hmm. Has this to the game, but unselfish. Finishes at the rim. Can finish at the rim. At least we've seen that all through high school. Now that we bring it in for these pro workouts, okay, he posted one of the highest verticals. Okay, in the combine scrimmages, he led them all in scoring. He's showing us 3-point range. If this was an international prospect, a team like the Thunder, you know what I'm saying, would be like snatching him up in the 20s with a lot of teams going, who?
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 months in the season being like, yo, that fool for the Thunder is solid.
You can play, right.
It's real solid. And case in point, man, the first pick in the draft, nobody's familiar with him whatsoever.
I personally felt that my Atlanta Hawks, my other team, y'all, this is the team I'm going watching because of
it. Of course.
Because of this guy right here. So Lakers has always been my team. And I'll never forget Kobe Bryant came to Phillips Arena and he was doing his free throws and his warm-up routine before the game. He didn't miss a shot. And he gave Atlanta like a 40 ball. And I said, this guy is my favorite player. But hometown team, I personally felt as though we should have took Sar the at the number one pick rather than the person we picked.
I haven't spent much time at all, honestly. But I haven't seen the real treasure at the end of the rainbow with Big Zachary.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pay attention. Like I said, I'm gonna be tuned in during summer league. That's for sure. If mm-hmm. not, I'll be there for a couple days. But
yeah, for sure.
I'm interested, but I probably would have went with Sar as well. And even Sar, man, it's like we've seen the mold come into the league like that. Some with great success. Some that were very mediocre. So, mm-hmm. and beyond that, there's at least 20 European players that were taken in this draft. And all of them are a random chip out of the bag
mm-hmm.
to the general mm-hmm. basketball public. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show, man, that the scrutiny that Bronny faced really, really skewed public perception of the kind of prospect that he was. And it just became a joke where it was like, I put my hands up for those mm-hmm. listening. I'm not going to waste the energy trying to hammer you over the head. Just wait.
Yeah, just seriously. Wait. I think Bronny's gonna wait. Be good.
Y'all don't switch up too soon now, all right?
Yeah, like don't come back. Like stay where you at. Because here's the thing about it. Like you said earlier, he was a highly coveted prospect coming out of basketball, coming out of high school basketball. He goes to USC. Everything's great. He has the issues with his health, with his heart. And so it's safe to say that even once he returned to basketball and he played, it's safe to say he wasn't mentally all the way there. It's safe to say that
it's just a lot on me. It's a lot. I'm a college freshman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so it's safe to say that he possibly wasn't all the way there, whether it's mentally, as far as his basketball ability.
That's one of the challenges of college basketball. You can take some of these international prospects. If Big Zachary played at Wake Forest, there is no guarantee. And I'm almost willing to bet he's not ending the season all SEC. College basketball is a dog. You know what I'm saying? It's folks that are hungry and familiar with the game. There's folks that just got talent out the wazoo. There's coaches that know how to, I'm about to eliminate this guy. He is one dimension. Like, the college game is a test of a lot. And it's, you know, to compare it to the G League or an international league, yo, to succeed on the collegiate level says a lot about how you are. Shout out to old boy from Oakland that got picked up to, I want to say, Cleveland Summer League team, Jack Golkey. Remember that boy who hit nine threes?
Yeah, he was hooping.
10 threes?
Yeah, the shooter. Yeah, he was good.
He kept it a stack in a post-game conference. Was like, look, I know I'm not going to the league. It's all good. And some of these other guys I'm playing against will. But I know that right now I can play against him. Those are the sort of type of dudes you're coming across in college. And shout out to him because he did earn a spot to at least show what – to try and earn another one.
Right. And now, see, I can appreciate players like that because it's better to understand where you're good at and what you can do versus focusing on what you can't. Because he reminds me of a player like Matthew Dellavedova, who doesn't check all the boxes as far as your typical NBA player, right? Not as tall, not super athletic, not necessarily known for his jump shot or for what he can exactly do on the basketball court. But you put him on the court with the right players around him, and he can have an impact. I mean, absolutely. He was chasing Steph Curry all over the court a few years ago in the championship game or the championship series when he was on Cleveland. After Kyrie and some other players went down, he ended up having to fill that gap. And then he also had some productive years after that with Milwaukee that a lot of people probably didn't see or know about. And so I can appreciate a guy like him who has grit. And like I said, who if he makes a roster, I'll be happy to see because I'm sure he'd be able to produce and provide some quality stuff to that team. The one thing that the European players have over the NBA players that come from college is that, and we see this with Luka, and we see this with a lot of the European players or players who come from elsewhere, if not Europe, is their fundamentals are more sound. The European strategy, the European system is completely, it's the complete opposite of the American system. Normally you go to middle school, high school, and when you're not playing in high school, you're playing summers and breaks, you're playing AAU. So the amount of games that you're playing in a year could be in the hundreds, but the amount of practices are not matching the level of games. However, in the European system, it's the inverse. You're practicing like crazy. You're drilling like crazy, and you don't have to play nowhere near as many games. So I personally feel that's the thing that the European players have that is to their benefit. They really get to hone their skills. And so you look at a player like a Tim Duncan who played 4 years in college at Wake Forest, speaking of Wake Forest, and, you know, he ends up becoming an extremely great player. But he flew under the radar because he wasn't quite as flashy, you know, all those different things, different elements that you got to consider once you're at the pro level. But, I mean, statistically speaking, and just watching him play basketball, Tim Duncan was phenomenal, and he had that 4 years of development. And so the European players, you know, they start at a younger age. They're able to go pro earlier, and you know they tend to.
And beyond that, man, it's the culture of the game elsewhere versus here in the States. We've had difficulty establishing a new face of American basketball, and thank God Jason Tatum has a ring now because now his name holds a lot of weight. We had a conversation on the last pod too about, yo, he could take KD's spot all time when it's said and done. Mm-hmm. He's easily on pace to do so. We mm-hmm. want to keep it a yeah, bean. They, Let's yeah, keep it what, a bean.
What they've bean. Accomplished, and he's what, 26?
Dog, go back to the pod from last one. If you're listening to this, he has a ring before a lot of the greats. And we know that that window right now is wide open. However, you know, we have him and we have a guy like Ant. I'm huge on Paolo. Whether or not he's American or not is sort of up for debate. And it's funny. We were talking about Wake Forest and I said that. Then I think I said all SEC, and that's definitely ACC. I'm sort of thinking Vanderbilt. I just wanted to clear that for the record for somebody. Talking about? Anywho, it's a reflection, dog, of the game. And it starts at the youth level, dog. It's crazy because you already know how I am with Bash now, dog. So sort of I've started to lean into conversation around youth sports, knowing that I am going to dive in to whatever this brother wants to, you know, whether it's t-ball, whether it's soccer, mm-hmm. whether it's swimming, mm-hmm. basketball, flag football, whatever it is, knowing that mm-hmm. I'm gonna probably be right there with him. I sort of been paying attention to these conversations, right? Uh-huh. And it's like, you know, hoop dreams is every kid's dream, you know, kind of growing up here. If not that, then, you know, on the football field. And we mimic the stars. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you shortcut how the stars got to where they got to. Kobe didn't become Kobe because he shot fadeaways every single day as a kid. It's like, no, he did the little things. Mm-hmm. Steph Curry didn't become Steph because he walked on the court and shot from half court 100 times a day. Mm-hmm. No, he shot from in front of the basket, take a step back. That shot, take a step back. That shot, like, he mastered shooting. And mm-hmm. shout out to Jacob Awada, man. We're going to get him on here very, very soon. My boy Jake, appreciate you, dog. You hit me up today, too. Great. He had a great stuff on here when we were talking about FIBA last summer and saying how just the gap has closed internationally versus nationally because their hunger to learn the game has risen and they're going about that a lot more often the right way than we are here in the States. This youth basketball and youth sports scene is so pay to play out the game fugazi trainers and who knows what. And thank God for the ones who are out there that are legit. Shout out to the Coach Taylors of the world. Mm-hmm. And you know, whoever it is that was impactful to you or somebody you know who was legit. But there's mm-hmm. a lot of folks out here that are teaching the game not in a fundamentally sound, successfully, you know, foundational way. Whereas that is being done elsewhere. And that's what translates to the confidence and the, you know, ability of a lot of the stars that are entering the NBA and have the hunger, you know. That's a whole separate conversation. I love what we're doing with this because that's what should be talked about coming off of this draft in terms of, mm-hmm. yo, half the names people had never heard of. Mm-hmm. And as it relates to the Lakers, I think that we got an absolute stud in Connect. And I think that Bronny is going to easily surpass expectations in year one. You know what I'm saying? I think that, like you said, this is going to elevate Bron to a whole nother level in the terms of, yo, I got my freaking the person that means the most in the world to me.
It's crazy, bro.
In my shadow now every day. Crazy, what Bronny being on the team brings to the Lakers is accountability for LeBron. Bron, you can't stand and not box out now. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or not even that, because you are going to shortcut. Yay, look, you 38, 22, 20-something years in, you've earned it. However, you are now going to hold yourself to another level, because it's not just I'm trying to convince Max Christie to max out. It's like, I really don't care if Max Christie reaches his potential. Right. Bronny, however, no. I have to set the tone. I have to be the leader. I have to uphold the standard. And that is just going to trickle down. And, oh, man, I think – and then that loops in J.J. Redick's ideology about the game and, you know, how can we maximize LeBron's gas tank for the season? How mm-hmm. can we keep him either off the ball or on the ball in a Magic Johnson sort of role? Well, mm-hmm. one of the most successful stories and elements of that championship 2020 season was LeBron led the league in assists. It was point Bron. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was LeMagic Johnson. Like – And what I hate was that before the shutdown happened, that team was firing on all cylinders. Yeah. They were smoking stuff.
It was a foregone conclusion. If COVID didn't happen, we were still going to win a championship.
I don't want to hear all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody's saying, oh, bubble. Y'all only won because of the bubble. No, no. If you say that, then no, you that, did not that watch team basketball had, that season. That it was a foregone conclusion. We were gonna win that one. Because Kobe passed away, got rested. So
Kuzma on the squad still, you know what I'm saying? And so it's like now, I'm optimistic, man. It looks like D'Angelo Russell wants to be back now.
Yeah.
And regardless of the pay that is, he has an opt-in clause that he could take. Whereas a week or two ago, I felt like he was on his sort of, nah, I'm going to go do me. I see what y'all trying to do. I got love for y'all. Y'all kind of sort of got love for me. But I'm going to just go do me over here. Whereas now it's looking like, nah, I'm a Laker. What are we talking about? Like, nah, yeah. I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back unless I'm full with the team. How can I, you know, what's Coach Carter? What's this boy who came back to the team? Nah, Coach, I want to be on the team. Like, it feels like that's the energy right now, that folks are galvanized sort of by this storyline. Because all the LA folks I'm seeing now, shout out to Antoine, shout out to Omar, like, I'm seeing like a rally that feels good around this, where who all these haters were and the folks who wanted to get their jokes off and thought it was Kiki time talking about Bronny. Laker faithful is like, they're having a conversation that we're having of, you know what? Yeah. This helps this team in a number of intangible ways.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I think that it was a huge sign, a huge positive sign, was when Bronny got drafted. I'm sure you saw the clip, but when Bronny got drafted, he was a bit emotional, you know? And so for me, I think that's a huge sign, because I think he was thinking about all the things he's been through up to this point. And the fact that he wasn't just immediately, oh, yeah, I knew I was going to get drafted. Like, my dad's LeBron James. Like he didn't have that posture or that energy of this was supposed to happen. It was that same type of energy of other draft picks who had maybe been wanting to do this their whole lives and finally shake comes that dream. So I think that LeBron is going to have a huge chip on his shoulder. I think he's going to want to show out in the summer league. And I think he's going to do that. I think that LeBron James Jr. is the typical NBA prospect that you would want on your team. The only reason why we're even having the conversation and the only reason why it's even a big deal like that is because he happened to be LeBron James Jr., and he happened to be LeBron James' son. If this was any other prospect, it's ESPN.
And Fox that's just Sports, crazy,
they'd be,
bro.
They'd be writing think pieces about how it's a miracle and how it's, you know, all these great things because like I said, the health and the heart and all that good stuff. So
yeah, no, think about it, dog. It's like, I'm LeBron's son. I know that I can hoop. I know for damn sure that I can hoop. And I'm really being written off? Like, y'all really doing this to me, dog?
Like just 2 years ago, I was a 4 or 5 year five-star prospect. Like, I wasn't trash.
Y'all think I'm undraftable? Which is why it does, you know, trigger those emotions when it does happen, because it didn't necessarily have to play out that way. And according to everybody, they didn't really want to see it play out that way. And it's the same as conversation we had on the last pod about what it feels like when you do finally win that first ring. It's like, dog, you do have to just take a step back and be like, huh. I've been working for this since day one.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened. Like, mm-hmm. I knew the mountaintop was attainable. I knew I wasn't crazy. I knew this was going to pay off. I knew we had it in us. I can't believe this sort of did just trigger itself. And those emotions you can't fabricate. Yeah, no, man, I see the same thing. Chip on the shoulder. That, yo, if he gets a bang out, his first bang out in summer league is going to send Thomas and Mac Center to his feet, bro. I was there for Zion versus RJ. I think Zion got a bang out on like the second possession. Buzzing in there.
Yeah.
Yo.
I'm buying a jersey. I'm buying Roddy a jersey.
Hey, 999. Shout out to Juice World. Long live X-Men. It's that time of year right about now too. I love it, bro. This is the next gen. This is the new generation of folks entering the league as well. It's dope, man. It's something to really buckle up and be excited to see how it does play out. Now, as far as the rest of free agency goes, we're going to get into that a little bit more probably on the next pod. But I think that for one, so far, so good. What my priority was for the Lakers this offseason was keep the roster intact as much as possible.
Yes.
As much as possible.
We don't need
add to this. Add to what we have. Add to the hunger that's already there. The unsatisfied feeling that's already there. Because that's going to push you in the next season. Instead of, now let's send half the team off and let's bring in new folks who now have to figure out whether or not they even like each other. Like, no, let's keep the team that got some scars and some the team. Let's keep the guys that lost to Denver 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
For this third time's a charm postseason run to be like, hell no, it's not going down like that this year. Mm-hmm. It's not. You know what I'm saying? We lost all these close ass games to these boys. No, not this year. Like, you know what I'm saying?
And we got a great core. We have a great core. You got LeBron, obviously, and AD. You know what I'm saying? Those are our franchise players. But, like, I have been, like, probably the best draft pick that we've drafted or that we've had in the past few years has definitely been AR-15. He has been hooping. He has been hooping. And, you know, it's important, like I said, that we keep those guys together. D'Angelo Russell had a fantastic season. This season he had last season, I think personally, was probably his best season since that second year in Brooklyn.
Yeah, the All-Star year. Yeah, he broke the Lakers record, team record for threes made. And if there's any coach, if there's any person who can look at the archetype that Austin Reeves is and then guide that person to their next level or just whatever their ceiling is, it's J.J. Redick to Austin Reeves. He's going to look at J.J. He's going to look at Austin and be like, hey, yo, if I had your handle, big dog, I'd have been a effing problem. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? He's going to empower that boy. What I think is imperative too, though, is that Bron, I saw some reports that they're preparing to offer him the max. Bron, big dog, you don't need the max right now, bro.
Yeah,
you don't need the max. We need you to leave some of that on the table, Brody. We need you to go the Patriot way, the San Antonio Spurs way.
Yes.
What y'all did when y'all teamed up originally in Miami. Y'all all took a little bit less than the max in order to make it happen and make it work. And we need that right now. So that would be canceling because there are some guys on a mid-tier that can really contribute to this team. And I'm talking about guys like a Malik Monk that's out there. I'm talking about guys like a Miles Bridges that's out there. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a Jonas Valanciunas that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
A Nick Claxton, possibly. You know what I'm saying? You probably don't necessarily need it right now. I've been a tremendous advocate for getting Harden in a Lakers jersey. Oh my God. Oh my God. It does not take much to imagine the pick and roll or the outlet transition. AD gets the board, kicks it to Harden. He throws a lob from half court to somebody. Or Bron gets the rebound. You know what I'm saying? Somebody run like dog. Him facilitating, keeping Bron off the ball, having the ability to still go get a floater or a bucket in crunch time, hit a step back, get to the line. Harden, what you doing over there in the clips?
And here's a stretch. I'm saying it's a stretch because
– And if not Debo, if not DeRozan, that's the other one. Bro, come back, dog. I'm glad DeRozan came home.
That would be great. I'm going to give you another one.
However, let me hear it.
I'm going to give you another one. All those, you know what, bro? I'm some good. I can see all of that working. But Klay Thompson.
Oh, of course. He's on the list as well.
Klay Thompson has had his issues.
Yeah, man. Klay is right there, dog.
Yeah.
If
the Warriors can't figure that out, first of all, just real quick, I think that the Warriors going off Steph Curry, a given. But Draymond Green, I don't care what anybody says. He's not that guy. So if I was in their position and I had to choose between Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, it would have been Klay Thompson by far, especially given what he's gone through and what he's meant to that team. But if they can't figure it out and Klay Thompson comes to the market, I mean, I think it would be a no-brainer for a guy like LeBron.
All about it, bro. Literally.
Because you know why? Because if Klay Thompson were to come to the Lakers, I could see him filling the same role he's had for the Warriors all this time. But you know what, Klay? Relax, bro. All we need you to do is be ready to chuck that thing, especially playing under a guy like J.J. Redick. We don't need you to run around and guard the best player anymore. We understand you're a little bit older, bro. You're slowing down a little bit. The injuries, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, come win sixth man of the year.
Man, like, because he's the type of guy who doesn't need the ball in his hands, as we've seen season after season, to score. I don't think so. Shooting is the last to leave. We've seen players like Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, JJ Redick, while we're talking about him, Mike Miller. We've seen Kyle Korver. We've seen all of these great shooters or people who have the ability to put the ball in the basket from range and in the mid-range shooting-wise be able to propel themselves deep, 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 far, far, far into their careers by still having that shooting stroke. One of the main reasons why the Dallas Mavericks were able to win was not only because Dirk Nowitzki was playing out of his freaking mind, his cotton picking mind, as they say, but because Jason Kidd was still a threat on the perimeter. And so as much as he was a pick and roll, pick and pop threat and could control the offense, you still had to respect that jumper off of J. Kidd. And it was the same thing for Steve Nash. And like I said, it was the same thing for Mike Miller, Kyle Korver. And like I say, even in J.J. Redick's later years before he retired, he was still a threat. You still couldn't leave him in the corner. You couldn't leave him on that elbow extended or on that wing extended because he was still accounted for and he was still a part of that offense with a shooting threat. So I could see Klay Thompson coming into the Lakers having less pressure on him because, like I said, I think AD is still our main guy that we should be going through.
Of course.
And then, like I said, you got LeBron, you got AR-15, you got D'Lo. And so, like I said, the pressure wouldn't be on you to really be to a number two guy.
It would exactly. No, man.
We need you come off the bench. I could see him averaging 16 or 17. I could see him shooting somewhere around 37 or 38 or so percent from three. And that would be quality. So that's another name I would love. And I would welcome him. Come on, bro. Come be a part of the legacy. Your dad was on the squad. Come be a part
daddy
of the
played,
legacy, bro.
Daddy played for the Lakers. Come on, dog.
Come on, man. Come
from,
be a
you
part
from
of the
SoCal.
Legacy.
And if not, another unrestricted free agent, Buddy Hield. He is the third name with Steph and Klay for the most three-pointers made over the last decade.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Bro is a
Buddy Hield's a good player. I'm
unrestricted
watching
right now.
Malik Monk I like because Malik Monk, I think he actually played for the Lakers before briefly, but yeah, he did. And so he's what you call the journeyman. You know what I'm saying? He's kind of been put on that journeyman level of
player.
And
it's still only like 26 or 7.
Yeah. And I said, but still a young guy. Like I said, I think, unfortunately, that Sacramento is probably going to lock him in because, when it comes to journeyman players, they want to have that sense of security and –
You got to secure. Yeah, you got to get your cheddar. You got to get that chicken.
Yeah, and so I think the Sacramento Kings. You know, he played for the Hornets. He was with Melo. He played with the Sacramento Kings for L.A. Lakers. So I think that the Sacramento Kings are probably the place that he could become a cemented player and really kind of get that stability that he's looking for. And I can understand if he most likely sent signs with the Kings. But yeah, all those names you liked. I mean, James Harden has been traveling from team to team. He's, the Rockets, the Clippers, the Nets.
James, you gotta complete that resume, big dog. You need the chip.
It's he's too good of a player to not have a championship. Now, when we talk about players that are really good and haven't won a championship, I mean, James Harden is probably, to me personally, the number one and number two. I would say that a guy like Allen Iverson is probably always gonna be in the number one spot for me personally. Just for what he meant to the game, his influence still to this day. But James Harden is incredible. I mean, how soon we forget, right? But
and
I mean, James
Harden's
Houston years?
He was the one that he led the charge for the one team that didn't roll over when Golden State was at its peak. And they came up short in the game seven. You know, he lost Chris Paul to an injury, lost to him, in just a couple of years they had KD and all of them boys. But it was them and the Spurs that were the only teams that were unafraid of Golden State at its peak and went bar for bar, toe to toe with them. Like,
he could contend. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, he got the Dwight experiment. You know what I'm saying? Like, I firmly believe that if injury, I mean, it's always injuries, right? And that's why injury is such an ugly and tough part of the game because there's so many what ifs if injuries didn't affect the game. But I have no doubt in my mind that if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, if they're even with the chemistry issues between Dwight and some of the other guys, they had Trevor Ariza on those teams, they had PJ Tucker on those teams, so they had
Eric Gordon.
They had the pieces. So Eric Gordon, right? And so I feel as though if Chris Paul doesn't get injured and the chemistry gets disrupted so late into the game, I have no doubt in my mind that they come out of that with the championship.
That's my personal thoughts,
but
I'll throw two more out there. That's another name that's floating around the CP. The Warriors today extended the deadline for the decision on his contract option to Sunday, and it was supposed to end today. They are looking to deal with Chris Paul or agree to a deal for Chris Paul in the next 48 hours. If not, I think he might become a free agent. I forgot exactly how his contract, what his opt-out status is, or whether or not he's just going to take the money for the next season, and then they're going to wait to see if they'll try and trade him. However, they are trying to work a move for CP in the next 2 days. So that's a name to watch out for. I'm cool if he does come because as well, oh, you're talking about that name about who has to finish the resume, Chris Paul. You know what I'm saying?
True,
CP's definitely gotta, you know, keep in mind that you're only going to have so many more cracks to get one in here. And
he is, I think, when it's all said and done in deeper conversations, he definitely will be the guy who should have got a ring. I mean, he had a shot and he blew it. And so we know how hard it is. He blew it. You know how hard it is to get to the championship.
He's not going to go down without trying to at least, you know, just land on the right squad to get one before it's all said and done. And that's looking, yeah. Hey, brother, you can only look at your next season ahead. Like, we can't start looking too far down the line. Like, it's now or never almost. But, bro, I got another name that some rumors are swirling around. And it's enticing to me. And, of course, all these people we're talking about aren't going to be Lakers. You know, a lot of fans of other teams are like, oh, the Lakers think they're just going to get everybody. No, but we know that LA has an appeal to almost everybody, and that's how we that's Laker. Hey, look, y'all not a part of this culture, so don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? This is what we do.
No, facts.
We spitball anybody. Michael Jordan might come back and play for the Lakers.
Right. It's the Lakers. I mean, we're still the Lakers.
Y'all worry about
y'all. Whatever happened, we're the Lakers. Like
Lonzo. There are significant murmurs that, for one, Lonzo came out of his shell. We know Lonzo is a ho-hum, quiet as kept, not going to talk about it too much kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Lonzo minds his business. He does him. Mm-hmm. He has been dealing with a, you know, lingering knee issue that he just hasn't got on the court because he's not going to jeopardize a real, you know, Sean Livingston-esque, Brandon Roy-esque, just degenerative, like, I don't know. I tried to push through, and I'm cooked now, and that's for the better. Kawhi Leonard did the same thing. He's sat down, but he is emerging from his show. He's got a new podcast with his bro, with Jello, with Demo, his big baller brand guys, and each week they provide an update on his status. He's finally talking about the injury, and essentially it wasn't much more than a meniscus and some, you know, some bone on bone sort of stuff, and let's just get this knee straight and then we'll be good. Mm-hmm. However, it won't get straight when you're consistently, like, you know, running to the ground. So he's at this point where he's ready to start talking about what's going on, and he, I think, will be back this season in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Now couple that with Chicago's recent trade for Josh Giddey. For one, just talking about that trade in the nutshell, if this was 18 months ago, Chicago has to send multiple draft picks along with Caruso in order to get Giddey. All right. Now, we know that he had his little escapade with the news cycle, and that, for one, impacted him. He's been emotional in multiple press conferences just about, like, yo, this is stressful, dog. Like, this is weighing on me. You know what I mean? It's been a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm getting booed at every stadium I walk into now. Like, mm-hmm. I'm literally public enemy number one now.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, sure. My fault. Sure, you know sure. What I mean?
Yeah.
Make or miss it, we all make mistakes.
Yeah, for sure.
That combined with sort of an overlap and redundance in OKC about Shea needing the ball so much and being so ISO capable, to where it's like, no, we need to surround you with playmakers, I mean, with spot-up shooters and guys who are, you know, above-the-rim finishers. And it's like, no, Giddey's a sort of – he's a facilitator. He wants to play – you know, he wants to be the, you know, sort of focal point of an offense. So his value came down. And I think that Chicago struck, and Caruso hasn't had the cleanest bill of health. I think that that trade might end up looking really good for Chicago next season. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. Think about, okay, well, if we got Giddey in here, do we need Giddey next to Lonzo? And Lonzo hasn't played pretty much the past two seasons. So if you're Chicago, you're not even really thinking about Lonzo being on the court because you've come adjusted to it. But if you're going to re-up his contract, do we need to? If we just brought in another 6'6", 6'7", primary ball handler who has vision and wants to keep, you know, wants to move the ball. And I think we're going to see a really resurgent Josh Giddey next year. So there's a lot of chatter about Lonzo just not being back in Chicago next season. And I could see that brother coming back to the Lake Show. Now, like I said, all these folks can't be there. We're not going to get Chris Paul and Lonzo and Clay. You know what I'm saying? Of course not.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the one there, you know, the few that do come, case in point, the Lakers can make some moves on the fringe money-wise, stack those up, and really have some pieces next year.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Pelinka and company, I mean, they...
Patience. Patience is a virtue.
It is. And I would say that Rob Pelinka and company, Genie and company, I don't think they've done a bad job, because even the team that the Lakers had right before the championship run, that previous season with Lance Stephenson and company, that was an exciting team. That team wasn't horrible. It was just that when it comes to playoff basketball, you know, how good you are in a regular season, it really doesn't matter for a 7-game series. That's part of what had made the Lakers palpable, and I think a semi-dangerous team, is because it really only as of late have team, and like I said, how soon we forget, right? But really only as of late have teams really figured out how to beat LeBron James in the 7-game series. Like for a very long time, part of a lot of teams' issues was they would have great regular seasons, you know, my Atlanta Hawks included, you know, they would have great regular seasons, the Toronto Raptors of the world, these other great teams. But when it came to playing LeBron James and company, whoever his team is, in a 7-game series, it's like, dog, how are we down 3-2? Like, what happened? Like, we had this great roster, great season. Like, we line up against these guys, and like I said, these matchups that we're talking about and these personnel inputs, like, it's just kind of hard to match up with, you know, especially in 2020 and, you know, definitely in 2016. You know, so,
eight straight finals in the Eastern Conference means that you went 32-0 in series,
man,
against other teams, like, over an 8-year stretch.
It's incredible. Like I said,
that's 3 times 8, which would be 24. You went 24-0 against the Eastern Conference,
man.
And then in the West, you first series, he gets hurt, you know, against Phoenix and them boys. Or no, before that, first postseason with the Lakers. Yeah, ran the gauntlet. Got Harden and Russ out of there. Got Jokic and them out of there. Got Portland and them out of there. It didn't get, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's not folks really haven't even figured Bron out still all the way in the series. It's just he can't go nuclear right now.
Yeah. The wonderful thing about LeBron James, and I had this conversation with somebody before because they were talking about how, you know, he's just – not as much as, you know, guys used to be. And I had to give him the breakdown. I'm like, dog, when LeBron James, and this is, like I said, this is kind of different now because he's a little bit older. But for a long time, if LeBron James shows up to your team, you're going to the championship and you just might win it within 2 or 3 years. It wasn't no, we got to go 4 or 5 seasons and kind of figure it out. It's no, LeBron James shows up. He's the best player on the team. That original roster that he comes to probably isn't the right one. There's some pieces that got to get moved out. But an offseason happens, some trades happen, some free agent signings happens, and then he suits up the next season. It's like, okay, cool. We're going to the championship. That's happened going for all the way back to Cleveland. That happened in Miami. That happened in L.A. Like, so at this point now, LeBron James has been an L.A. Laker longer than he's been a member of any other team. But it's happened literally every team he's went to. It happened when he showed up in Cleveland. It happened when he transitioned to Miami. And like it happened when he transitioned to or back to Cleveland. And then it happened when he transitioned to LA. Every time within about 2 or 3 seasons, they're going to the championship. And like I said, for a long time, it was a 50-50 to whether or not he's going to win it or not. Because like I said, it was what, from 2011 to 2020, he was in the championship. So whether he wins or loses, I mean, you know, that's a different type of discussion. But I mean, like I said, what he's been able to do with the right pieces, is nothing short of incredible. So I feel as though we're leading up to a similar situation. It's okay, cool. We because like I said, he's been in the playoffs. That's the thing about it. It ain't like he's just missing the playoffs. He's only missed the playoffs one time as a member of the LA Lakers, if I'm not mistaken. It was that very first season. And like I said, they had Lance Stevens and some other people.
And he got hurt at Christmas after they beat them, after they beat the Golden State Warriors.
And it's like
with Lonzo and Ingram.
Right. And so they made a trade next season, won a championship. After that, you know what I'm saying? They changed the roster again. So like I said, we lost some of that capability. But like I said, we've been competitive. We've been right in there. And like I say, just because, you know, it's Lakers and we have 17 championships and we've been, you know, the premier franchise in the NBA, the expectation, like I said, obviously is going to be adding another banner to the Raptors, just like a Boston Celtics. You know, like I said, the LA Rams won the championship a few years ago. The LA Dodgers ain't really nothing. So the Lakers have been the ones that the city gets behind, that the NBA gets behind as far as the perennial winners when it comes to professional basketball, going all the way back, like I said, to the 60s, 50s, obviously the Magic Johnson, Kareem Showtime era with James Worthy and those boys. And then obviously we got spoiled with Kobe and Shaq, and then Kobe did it by itself. And then you transition to the LeBron era after that break off in which Kobe retired in 2016, and then he tragically passed away. So yeah, I'm excited for the future of the Lakers, man. I think that we are going to continuously to get better. Like I said, I think that LeBron's going to be revitalized. I think that his son being there, as you spoke to, is going to cause accountability. And so with your franchise player, your all-time leading scorer in the history of basketball for the NBA, you know, with him having to be accountable and it kind of, you know, do that so he can put his son on game. Bronny having a good rookie season. I can see Bronny coming out the gate and averaging like, you know, 11 and 3 or 4, you know, maybe 4 or 5 rebounds.
You know, it doesn't matter, man. He won't be called upon to do any of that. So anything that we do get is additive.
I'm excited for JJ Redick, bro. I think his basketball mind.
I think Dalton Kennett could definitely average an 11 or 12.
Yeah, I mean, because like I said, you talk about, so let's say, obviously, you know, he comes off the bench, you know what I'm saying? He comes in, let's say, I would say, initially speaking, I don't see him getting many minutes in the beginning only because.
No, I think Dalton Kennett can for sure average 12.
Yeah, Dalton for sure. Because, I mean, like I said, you talk about,
I see 2 threes for him a game.
Get to the bucket, a couple free throw attempts. I mean, yeah, like the 12, you know. And so, like I said, but the wonderful thing about it, like I said, especially if they make a smart free agent signing and they're able to get one of the people that we talked about, the one thing I can say about our rookies, it's no pressure. Just come in, buy in, and be as great as you can. Listen to the staff. You know, I'm hoping, and while we're talking about adding to the team, I do believe that them getting Rondo as an assistant will be a very smart move, because he was a part of that championship team. Rondo is a guy who I've always been a fan of as far as his basketball mind. Even before he came to the Lakers, I mean, obviously, you know, his Celtics run, he got a championship with them. But every team he's been a part of after the Celtics leading up to the championship with the Lakers, while his individual production may have not been that great and he may not have been in his prime anymore, like we saw what happens when he has the right pieces around him. Because one of the most underrated parts of that championship team was Rondo's IQ. Because like I said, Frank Vogel was Frank Vogel. I don't think that, like I said, his coaching was a big influence on that team. I personally believe the thing that propelled us to the championship the most was LeBron and AD having a great 1-2 punch, Dwight Howard being a defensive anchor and disrupting other teams that were in the way, Golden State Nuggets, like the Denver Nuggets. But also the key piece I felt was Rondo's defense and his floor general ability. I mean, we mentioned Chris Paul earlier. I mean, some people have looked at me crazy for saying this, but like, in one for one, I mean, sometimes I think I would pick a Rajon Rondo and try to throw him into my scheme before I would pick a Chris Paul, because Chris Paul might get hurt. You know what I'm saying? Chris Paul, he just doesn't have the track record as far as being able to get all the way and play at a good level all the way to the end of the season. Talking about playoffs and potential championship run included. So I'm excited for the Lakers, man. I think that, you know, we will have to wait and see what happens. I think maybe around Christmas break, we'll kind of have an idea going into the new year's. You know, I think we'll have a kind of good idea where they're at.
It's up, bro. It's up. It's up again. Nah, man. This really injected some spirit into this team, dog, and it's plenty for us to look forward to now. I think that was a nice, hefty, deep dive into the trajectory of what they got going on. I'm going to be heavily tuned into international play this season, this summer with the Olympics. It's not going to be a cakewalk. If anything, it's just great to observe. It's great to observe. Mm-hmm. They assembled some boys to go play this summer. Yeah, KD, Steph, Bron, AD.
We got us
alone.
It ain't gonna be a cakewalk. It's not gonna be 08 or 12 or not even 16, but we got a squad this year, man. I'm excited.
Hey, we'll see though, because Steph, Bron, KD, AD.
That's something. And Olympic basketball is different. Olympic basketball is different.
I'm literally stopping right there. Let me pull the roster back up one more time. We got a squad going out there this year.
Bam, Tatum? Devin, Steph, AD, KD, Anthony Edwards, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Halliburton, Drew Holiday, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Jason Tatum. The head coach is Steve Kerr. Assistant coach is Mark Few. The other assistant coaches are Eric Spoelstra and Tyronn Lue. So yeah, from front to back, man. I didn't know that the staff had made a rotation on some of their coaches. Yeah, this is gonna be great. This is gonna be great because you got Bam having his coach on the team. LeBron's former coach, even though Eric Spoelstra and LeBron didn't get along great at first, they figured it out, and now they obviously won two championships. Tyronn Lue, LeBron's former coach. Tyronn Lue is probably one of the better coaches that the league has seen.
Oh, yeah, of course. Steph having
player personnel liking him and him understanding the players and then drawing up X and O's and understanding schemes and, like I said, player personnel on the court and different lineups. So, I mean, you talk about the Avengers. We got the Avengers, the X-Men.
It's low-key scary with the squad they're sending out there. And Kawhi might not even touch the court. Like, we'll see.
Kawhi might just fun guy his way to a gold medal, man.
Cross his legs, you know what I mean?
He might just fun guy his way to a gold, bro. You got Jason Tatum coming up.
Halliburton going to be throwing backboard passes against these second units, man. In garbage time. Like, it's not like it's 1992 again. Yeah. Did you want to talk about any of what we saw last night, bro?
Man.
We're going to get out of here real soon, man. We're going to get out of here in the next 10 or so.
Man. Let me tell you something about that debate. We need to just take both of those individuals, put them to the side, and let's go back to the drawing board and see if we can come up with two just whole fresh new candidates at this point. I personally believe that Biden lost that debate. I think that Donald Trump, regardless of the lies he was spewing, he won it because it's about composure. One of the biggest elements of political races and political maneuvering and winning elections and being put into, not even just for the president, whether it's a mayor, governor, city councilman, you name it.
Student body president.
Whatever it is. Part of that is how you are presenting yourself to the public, to your constituency and to the voters. Are you a symbol of strength or weakness? Are you bold or meek? Like, these things matter. Now, obviously, what matters most is their points, what they believe, what they want to do, all of that. Obviously, what type of laws they want to enact, how they feel about major issues, which is what the points of discussion were, you know, abortion, the
immigration, economy,
conflict, all that stuff is important too. Of course, that's the most important. But how you actually present yourself is also probably equally, if not sometimes more important. Case in point, if you look at Nixon's presidential debates back in the 60s, this was the first time in which we had television and everything like that to really show the American audience what's going on.
Charisma.
And so Nixon had one of the worst presidential debates ever. Not because of what he was speaking, but he was sweating profusely. He looked uncomfortable and all these different things. And so the American public lost a lot of faith in him because of that. And so we kind of saw a different version of that last night with Biden. Biden, his overall stature and his assuredness just didn't seem like it was there. So we've been talking, going back and forth, you know, speaking, you know, with a good tone, you know, a certain level of dictation and all that type of stuff. But last night, Biden was kind of talking like this. He was saying, you know, and during my administration, it sounded like he was, you know, he was whispering.
We've seen a different Joe Biden.
I mean, like, call him sleepy. And his head kept doing like this. For those who can't see me, I'm dropping my head down. And I swear to you, he fell asleep at one point. I promise. They call him Sleepy Joe. And I swear to you, he fell asleep at one point.
I mean, it's a fact of the matter. But it's like, we can recall Vice President Joe, who, you know, had conviction in his speeches. And he's been in the political landscape for decades. So it is second nature for him at this point. And eventually he can get up there and, you know, attempt a speech off muscle memory.
Right.
However, yes, the just how you are landing and beyond policy, beyond, you know, research and evidence and all of that, just some of the your common sense point, just in some of the remedial argumentative traits,
yeah,
like Trump is able to just outmaneuver. It's like outboxing them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. When it comes to point for point, I believe that Donald Trump won when it came to point for point for this reason. Ad hominem is something that decreases your credibility. So Joe Biden was being attacked by Donald Trump at certain points during debate. And rather than debunking Donald Trump or dismissing his points and just staying on topic and answering the questions as the moderator was presenting them, Joe Biden was participating in ad hominem. Yeah. Now, from Donald Trump's side of the fence, an ad hominem attack is probably within his character. But even last night, he didn't do too much of that. However, Joe Biden wanted to talk about, you know, Donald Trump's personal life and him dealing with porn stars and all these different
things. If anybody can dish it back, take it, that's it. He's like, come on, all day long.
Right. And I believe that in that moment, and even before this, preparing for the debate, Donald Trump probably counseled on some of that. So here's the major thing to take away for those who are listening and for those who are wanting to understand where this election may go. So I was watching CNN, NBC, Fox News, and CBS before the actual debate took place, just to kind of get an idea of where everybody was feeling.
It's a boxing match for real.
Yeah, and so and to your point, I'm gonna drop this on you in the listening audience. So for the age range of 18 through 29, which is the youngest demographic, obviously, that's going to be voting in this election, over 50% of them on polls across the different news outlets. So like I said, CNN, CBS, NBC, Fox, you name it, they had all projected, had all measured that for the age group 18 through 29, over 50% of that age group is in favor of Trump before the debate. And so after the debate, that group was even more so in favor of Trump. And the reason why that is important is because older voters are almost always set in their ways and tend to stick to one side or the other. So if they voted Republican in the last election, it's likely that they voted Republican in one before that.
Now you're kicking grease, bro. Go ahead.
And so on and so forth. So in
what may tip the scale is the variable that's most likely to change, which is the new batch of voters. Age range is already the least the population or the size. That is already the portion of voters that turn out the fewest.
Exactly.
So if you are able to galvanize and, you know, outperform expectations of that class, or just win over a surprising majority of those voters, it would be sort of impactful. And mm-hmm. It's also tough to see where, you know, Joe is countering that. With that demo, of course, you know, Dems are probably pulling on women to sort of lean their way, especially mm-hmm. when we're talking about abortion rights.
Mm-hmm.
The Black vote is really coveted right now as well. 100%. There's some playing to what we want on both sides, and I don't think that there's you know, a united front in terms of where we stand. I think mm-hmm. it's a state to state thing. I think it's a mm-hmm. to each his own thing. Mm-hmm. And in this conversation, I am by no means trying to sway or influence whoever it is you are feeling in this election.
This is a nonpartisan discussion.
Yes. I think that having the conversation publicly and, you know what I'm saying, the way we are, like, I think that that's just important in being informed and being engaged. And with that, we will have less opposition or just sort of, I was blindsided by what happened, or I want to rage against this because, yeah, you didn't take part in the result.
Mm-hmm.
So now you look from the outside looking in, like, whoa, wait, it happened. When did y'all all cut me in the line? Mm-hmm. You wasn't looking. Mm-hmm. Like, nah, you got to pay attention, man. And if anything, you can be aware of what's going on. Say you don't rock with it, but you still know it's coming. Mm-hmm. Like, interesting, man. And you know, I've heard a lot as well. And as we get closer, a lot of those numbers will start to be more, you know, right now there's a lot of margin for error, and there's a lot of undecided folks.
Yeah.
So it's just 50, crazy. 50,
essentially. They showed the polls before, like I said, and afterwards. The popular vote, I think Biden had like 51% of the popular vote, and Donald Trump had about 49%. So that's like literally right in the middle. It's still any man's race, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. Nevada is as close as it gets. I'm sure Georgia is as close as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the dominoes that are going to stack up to whoever gets the 270 first.
Yeah.
So, you know, the conversation on the end, and of course, let's not lose sight of congressional elections, local representatives and senators, and who controls Congress. That is equally important, if not more. We know how the whole balance of power works and the branches of government. Now, y'all had poli-sci. I'm not telling y'all that's for the first time, but mm-hmm. it's just important to take note, man. And like, it's all not a joke. It is a joke in terms of, like, you know, at the end of the day, we don't have the final say. We go with what, you know, however it does pan out. However, look, man, we and this is one of the things as we age, bro, it's a thing that, you know, look at us, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's crazy is I almost can't remember the 2020 election, dog, because that was also in the middle of COVID.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to see how, like, I'll be very curious to see on a state-to-state level, even. That's the better way to sort of judge it and mm-hmm. compare just the total voter turnout then versus 2024. Because did a lot of folks not partake just because mm-hmm. it was, you know, pandemic and I'm not paying, you know, whatever stimming me up, like, you know, whatever the conversation is, or are a lot more people coming out this year, mm-hmm. And that tips it in favor one way or the other. Like, there's just a lot of variables. I love what you brought up to what you the points you brought out right there, because it's interesting, man. It's really interesting. It's all about
winning different graphics, I think, at this point in time. You're absolutely right, man. The 2020 election, I personally did not vote only because I don't believe in making uninformed decisions. When you're talking specifically about the Black community, I believe that our right to vote was given and was earned by those who came before us, not so that we could just vote for a particular party or particular people, so that we would have the right to make informed decisions and be a part of the political process and to make the decision that we saw fit to make at this point in time. So during the 2020 election, I just didn't have enough knowledge of the candidates and what points they stood on. And so, you know,
yeah, we were college transplants at the time too. I was a California resident living in the
Valley. Yeah, it was a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, and like I said,
COVID. I'm not going, you know,
COVID was jacking everybody's life. So, you know, some people didn't vote, some people did. So I do believe that this particular election season, we'll see. I would argue probably. So the 2016 election was the first one that I voted in. I skipped 2020. And now you move to 2024. So I believe that we'll likely have, and I'll actually investigate this once it's all said and done, but I believe that we will likely have the most turnout since probably the 2016 election, when Donald Trump was elected the first time. Because I know that, I just remember, I was in the military at that time, but I just remember that, I mean, it was people coming out of the woodwork
who would and honestly, bro, I think I said Obama, but going back to Obama, what I wanted to say just off the top of mind, won him the election, was the mass turnout of young people.
He had won the three major demographics that you need to win. In order to win an election, there's three major demographics that you want to appeal to and win at the national level. You always want to appeal to these people anyway, but especially at the national level, you want to appeal to young people. You want to appeal to minorities. And when I say minorities in a political sense, I mean the Black community, Hispanics, the LGBT community, and other groups like that. That's what I mean by minorities when you talk about the political sense. And the last group that's also important to win are women. And so that ability for these politicians to garner support from those particular groups will directly translate to whether or not they win. So I can tell you probably for sure, in this last, when Biden won in 2020, he had secured the support of those three groups.
He did it twice. You got to at least get two of them.
Right, precisely. If you can get two of them, you can probably swing it in your favor. Because like I said, once again, older voters, probably about, I would say in the age range of about 40 plus, they become more so set in their ways. And that's the most
predictable one.
Strictly Democrat, and they will vote Republican regardless of candidate, and the other people will vote Democrat regardless of candidate. But like I said, those other three groups that I just described, they are more likely to have their opinion swayed, and they're more likely to swing from party to party based on election to election based on the candidates and the points that they take. So for example, there's a lot of people that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 that will not be voting for Donald Trump in 2024. There's a lot of people who didn't vote for him in 2020 as well. And there's tons of people that I've spoken to who voted for Joe Biden in 2020, but they will not be voting for him in 2024. And most of those people are in the three groups that I just described. So, because those are obviously the people who are most in touch with our own age group, you know what I'm saying, and so on and so forth. So it's interesting. Like I said, I wish we had a whole fresh two new candidates, because although I probably do like Joe Biden as an individual, and I mean, I don't really care for his political opinions, to be honest, but I believe in having a strong face to represent the United States of America and to be the quote unquote leader of the free world. And so moving forward, I don't believe that Joe Biden maybe possesses the acumen at this point in time, after, as you noted, what, a 50 something odd year political career. He's been in politics, I think, since the 70s or 60s.
It's not even that. It's like that, those elements, intangibles even of the candidate. When Trump makes a point like, no, they got those hostages over there, he's just handing over money. He's giving them money. They think we're stupid. They know we're going to do it because he's done it time and time again. I'm not going to do that. And like, and stuff like that lands with a common individual. You kind of go, oh, right. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And it's as simple as you can make it.
Yeah.
That's sort of how you connect to the masses. You got, you know, wise guy Vivek Ramaswamy is like, bro, so damn smart, and can speak a mile, you know, a million miles a minute. Where it's like, dog, you sound like you know what you're talking about, but I can't really jack it because it's not making sense to me, plain enough. You know what I'm saying? Right. And when it's just a. Pay attention, folks. We're going to have some more of these conversations. And that's about it.
Yeah, I think it'll come down. One last point. I think it'll come down to the swing states, as it tends to normally do.
Oh, it's going to be a buzzer beater, bro.
Yeah. Like you mentioned my home state of Georgia. We were blue before. We've been red before. It really just depends on which election it is. Like I said, for our last Senate run, we were blue, thanks to Stacey Adams and others. When Obama was running, we were blue. But
the result in Georgia is what also sparked January 6th.
Precisely. So that's something to consider.
We had in Nevada had politicians attempt to submit false records of who won the state. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And so Michigan is another important state that tends to always be one of the top two or three states, as far as whoever wins that particular state is likely to win the election. And so, like I said, we got to stay tuned. They said this debate has, I think, piqued a lot of people's interest, which is important. And so I think that based on the questions that were presented and the answers, I think that a lot, like I said, a lot of people's interest is piqued. And so they'll be paying attention and looking to see how Donald Trump moves forward and his potential administration and his team, how they move forward. And also Joe Biden. I mean, I think just purely based off of last night, Joe Biden and his team has a lot to work to do as the incumbent president and wanting to get reelected. And Donald Trump, however, is going to have to continue to work because a lot of political people, even his own niece and some other parties, have spoken out against him. There were some people who were with him before in the previous runs that are no longer on his side and vice versa. One of the major points that was discussed on the news networks was the fact that his wife hasn't been traveling with him, and which is tradition. You know, normally the spouse will travel from city to city, from place to place, representing for their spouse. And so that hasn't really been happening. There's been whispers and rumors and plot lines, so to speak, that maybe Joe Biden will be replaced. The Democratic Party doesn't have as much faith in him anymore after last night. So let's say just kind of like with the Lakers, we're going to have to wait and see what happens and how things develop. November is, I think this is probably going to be probably so far the most important election of my lifetime. I've been a part of, you know, we've had Bush in my lifetime. We've had Obama twice in my lifetime. We had Donald Trump and then Joe Biden. So I think probably the heyday of my personal lifetime was the Obama years. And then things kind of took a nasty turn with Trump, not only just because he became president per se, but because of what happened during his administration with COVID and all of that. But like I said, now moving forward, I think it's going to be an important election. I am still undecided. I mean, I don't know which way I want to go. Like I said, I'm not loyal to any particular party. I'm not loyal to Democrats or Republicans. As we said before, this is a nonpartisan discussion. And I don't really believe in party loyalty. I believe in measuring the candidates, measuring their own points and what viewpoints they take and what type of laws they want to enact and things like that. And I tend to make my decisions at all levels, whether it's national, state, or local elections. I tend to base my decision-making around that rather than party loyalty. But we'll see.
And what's interesting as well, last thing is for me, is looking ahead even further, 2028, as of now. Now, hypothetically, say Trump wins, I fully expect him to try to throw a wrench in this as much as possible. But via the 22nd Amendment, you can only serve 2 terms, you know, mm-hmm. coming off of FDR mm-hmm. in his role during wartime. Mm-hmm. So this would be Trump's second term. If Biden wins, this will be his second term. Mm-hmm. 2028, it's time to play ball again for real. Like,
yeah. It'll be new faces.
So we will get, like you said, this is the last Warriors-Cavs matchup. and some new blood going to try and jump in here sooner and later.
Yeah. I remember when Cavs, it's funny you say that. I remember when the Cavs and the Warriors were in the final of all those years. I remember they were actually taking like the commercials and was like, 2029 Cavs versus Warriors, and then
it was old. The
team with LeBron, and then like by 2050 it was like a team of all LeBrons and like a LeBron cyborg. So yeah, this will be both of either one of theirs last time. And like you said, moving to 2028, it's gonna be some new blood, hopefully some younger blood. I think that's something that's needed, is youth. Need some youth in these positions.
No, I think that Vivek dog, I think he got some momentum, man. I'm not gonna hold you. And as far as Dems, yeah, we'll have to see. You know, there's some Gavin Newsom momentum. I think Kamala deserves a chance. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see in due time. We appreciate you for listening, folks. D-Loop University, man. If you got shout-outs on the way out, go ahead, think of some, and give them a shout-out on the way out. But y'all might have thought that just because the season ended and we were low-key during the playoffs that this wasn't about to kick up. But like I said on the last part, we're here when you need us. And we try to bring, you know, some salt to the game and in a good way. So probably didn't think you were going to get Lakers offseason and the debate as a two-pack. You're welcome.
As we say in Sigma Land, you're welcome.
Shout out to Big Maui. You want one or two? You did.
Yeah, man. Shout out to God. Shout out to the homies. Shout out to my alma mater now, Bowie State University. I've graduated since we spoke, man. So, yeah, a lot of big things going on. Shout out to the LA Lakers, man. Hopefully we can bring in a championship in a couple years.
Yes, sir.
Shout out to my nephew, Baby Bash.
The legend. Hell yeah, man. Yo, yeah, man. Three. Our brother's three on Monday.
Man, it's crazy, bro. That is crazy to hear. Like, I remember hearing the news drop. Oh, I'm about to be a pappy. And it's like, what? And then, you know, because I remember, you know, remember you and John both dropped the bomb around the same time. So I think Bash and his daughter, they're born, I think, like a couple days apart.
They're back to back. Yeah.
Something like that. So it's like, yeah, man.
Yeah. She's a July baby.
You know what
baby,
they was doing
say.
During COVID, folks.
Yeah. It was July babies. Hey, look, man. It's a crazy life. You know, there ain't no script to this thing, man.
Yeah, man.
Nah, shout out to my big bro, man, too. He just brought another one in. Shout out to baby Sophia, man. More life. Shout out to my sister. Shout out to Lil Paisley. And, yeah, man. Thank y'all for tuning in. As always, we will be back before you know it. Till next time.
Peace.